We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, titled Creation of the Kumaras and Others. Text number 48. Brahma is the personal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the source of transcendental sound and is therefore above the conception of manifested and unmanifested. Brahma is the complete form of the Absolute Truth and is invested with multifarious energies. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The post of Brahma is the highest responsible post within the universe, and it is offered to the most perfect personality of the universe. Sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to become Brahma when there is no suitable living being to occupy the post. In the material world, Brahma is the complete representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and transcendental sound, pranava, comes from him. He is therefore invested with multifarious energies, from which all the demigods like Indra, Chandra and Varuna are manifested. His transcendental value is not to be minimized, even though he exhibited a tendency to enjoy his own daughter. There is a purpose for the exhibition of such a tendency by Brahma, and he is not to be condemned like an ordinary living entity. Om Jnanatimiranthasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshudan Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamargyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Samitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha He Krishna Karna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagarpade Gopesha Gopika Kanda Radha Kanda Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyahe Vacha Palitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Bhutair Mahabharya Ima Puro Vibhu Nirmaya Shete Yadamusha Purusha Bhunte Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmaka Solankrishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime. Hare Krishna. In this verse, the greatest position of Lord Brahma is described. Why his greatest position is mentioned in this verse? Because apparently he has committed a mistake by chasing after his daughter for sexual union. So it was a mental fall down. So that chase practically was in the mind. So it was a fall down for such a great personality. And in this verse and in the next verse, this is explained, and it is very clearly mentioned that we shouldn't criticize Lord Brahma. So why we shouldn't criticize Lord Brahma? So to explain this point, this verse is presented. So herein, we can see the greatest position of Lord Brahma. And what is it mentioned as his greatest position? Because he is representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. It is not an easy task to become Brahma in this universe or in any of the universes. The most pious living entity who is most close to the Supreme Personality of Godhead gets the post of Brahma. So how difficult it is to become Brahma? It is very easy to criticize Brahma, but how difficult it is to become a Brahma? And in fact, if we have that much of determination to become Brahma, or if we have that much of determination to perform pious activities, then we can easily perform our devotional service. We won't cry chanting 16 rounds or, you know, doing some services. We won't cry. We can do it very easily because the standard of piety is so high. So high. We can see the example of Nirga, the king, who was performing so much of piety, so much of charities. He was giving thousands and thousands and thousands of cows in charity to Brahmanas. Not to anyone and everyone. Just like our charities or the people in general, they perform their charity while walking on the Swanson Street. If they see a beggar, they toss a coin into the begging bowl. Or they see a busker, they throw some coins. Or give to some Amnesty International or, you know, Red Cross. Or so. We can give so many different kinds of charities. But these kinds of charities are charities in the mode of ignorance. The people who obtain these charities, they are not qualified to use it properly because they are not self-realized or highly qualified in Vedic knowledge. But Nirga, he found qualified personalities. He found qualified Brahmanas. And he could give thousands and thousands and thousands of cows. So think about giving such kind of a charity. We can't even give those charities in our mind. What to speak about physically, because we don't even have that much mind control to give thousands of cows in charity within our mind. We may wonder the example of Vasudev when Krishna was born. Krishna was born and he was a Kshatriya and it is his nature to award charities, but he had nothing because he was locked up in the prison house. Now he had to give some charity according to the Vedic injunction, and what he did? He gave thousands and thousands and thousands of cows in charity to Brahmanas and other wealth and other opulences. We can just say, but can we really mentally give a cow in charity and give the next cow in charity? You know, we can't. We can't even imagine. So they could do so because they were qualified. Now, how much piety one has to perform to become a Brahma? Even how much piety one has to perform to become a demigod? Forget Brahma, who is the greatest of the demigods. But just to become a demigod, how much sense control one should have? How much Vedic sacrifice one should perform? In fact, the currency in which the Vedic civilization used to trade was the piety, the currency of piety, not our dollars. We usually trade, you know, we see how many dollars and we do comparison between Indian rupees, maybe Nepalese rupees, maybe American dollars, Indian dollar, you know, Australian dollars, and we do comparison. So we are trading in the currency of plastic or paper. However, the currency in which the Vedic civilization used to trade was the currency of piety. It is exemplified by Bali Maharaj. Because Bali Maharaj usurped the position of Indra, as we know. He threw him out of his post. Usually we can see in the political circles. One person is trying to, you know, pull down another person and somehow or other take the position. So in that way, the king of the demons, Bali Maharaj, he did that. He could obtain the position of Indra. And Indra was out of post. He had nothing to do. And Bali Maharaj was so intelligent. What he did next, once he obtained the post of Indra, he understood that he is not really qualified to get the post of Indira. Why? Because he doesn't have enough pious credit to hold the post. What he did next? He got the qualified brahmanas and he started performing sacrifices to obtain piety. Because without piety, he cannot hold the post. Just like in the politician, they need a certain kind of majority to hold the post. Otherwise, they had to go out of the ruling power. In the same way, Bali Maharaj knew the power of piety. So all these kings, all these Vedic kings, all these demigods, and the greatest of the demigods, Lord Brahma, knew the power of piety. And they were qualified to perform piety and they had enough pious credit. And that's how Brahma got this position as the supreme personality within this universe. So he's addressed here as Brahma is the personal representation of the supreme personality of Godhead. So it is like Krishna and then Brahma. Think about that. From the Lord, Brahma comes directly. And who is reporting to? Brahma is reporting to Krishna himself, directly. And here, another very interesting point is mentioned that he is the source of transcendental sound vibration. Why transcendental sound vibration is so important? Because it is mentioned in Vedanta Sutra. In the last verse, or last sutra of Vedanta Sutra, what is the first sutra of Vedanta Sutra? Atado Brahma Jigyasa. At least we should know the first sutra. Okay, which is very important. Because Atato Brahma Jigyasa. What is the meaning of that? Anyone knows? What is the meaning of that?
You must know the Brahman.
Yeah, you must know the Brahman. More literally, it is Atha. Now, therefore, you have to inquire into the Absolute. Now, therefore, you have to inquire into the Absolute. What is the meaning of now? Now means, yes, now we have got a human form. Therefore, you have to inquire into the Absolute. So, this is the first sutra. And what is the last sutra of Vedanta Sutra? It is Anavarti Shabdat. Anavarti means liberation. Or liberation from the material clutches. Shabdat, through sound vibration. So, it is just one sutra. See the potency of the sutra. So, the whole material creation is there. There are unlimited universes. And the whole spiritual injunctions are given by Vyasadeva in a nutshell in the form of Vedanta Sutra. And the last sutra of Vedanta Sutra is Anavarti Shabdat. So that's it. Anavarti Shabdat. Just two words we can say. So liberation through sound. So that is the whole sutra. And that sound is so important. And that sound is initially carried by Lord Brahma. So here, particularly the sound vibration is mentioned as pranava, that is omkara. So the Lord gave omkara to Lord Brahma. So Brahma is carrying the pranava. And pranava has different meanings, different aspects. As we know, pranava is indeed the impersonal aspect of Krishna. Pranava sarva vedeshu. When you see pranava anywhere in the Vedic mantras, what we need to understand that Krishna is present in his impersonal feature. At the same time, pranava has transcendental personal aspect. And that is considered as A, U and M. Okay. Particularly, that's called Nadanta. So, Nada, another meaning of, another word, another synonym to pranava is Nada. Nada means a sound. Here it is mentioned as the sound. Brahma, it's mentioned as the Brahma. It is a sound vibration. So in these three letters, A, U and M, one is representing the Jiva. First one is Jiva. Second is the energy of the Lord, which is ultimately personified by Srimati Radharani. And M is called the Nadanta. Anta means the end. Nada Anta means the end of the transcendental sound vibration. That is Krishna. So Krishna's another name is Nadanta, because he is present in the end of Nada, the end of pranava, the end of omkar. Or in other words, the omkar can ultimately lead one to Krishna. So that sound vibration is carried by Lord Brahma. And he is going to instruct the spiritual knowledge to his disciples, to his descendants. So all his descendants are highly qualified. They can live for many, many, many years, just like Brahma. May not be as long as Brahma, but still they can live for a few manvantaras. They are very powerful. Even Daksha, we can see in the after the Dakshayagya, he got a different kind of body, and he was reborn at the end of Swayambhuva Manvantara. That is the first Manvantara. And since he realized that he had much more power than he has now, he went to perform austerities. He went to perform piety. And he performed austerity for around 5 Manvantaras. And towards the end of 6 Manvantara, he came back with all his previous powers. Because we know Daksha committed offense. He got cursed and he got a god body and everything. Then he left. And then he again took birth. And then he understood he had more power and he wanted to gain all the power. So he went to perform piety. He performed austerities and then he came back after 5 Manvantaras. See the position, or see the power of Daksha, who is a descendant of Lord Brahma, direct descendant of Lord Brahma. So this is the power of descendants of Brahma also. So the initial cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, starting from 3 onwards, we can see now Lord Brahma is creating many of his sons. His Manasa Putras are there, Lord Shiva is there. So after that, you know, further Manus will be coming. So all these personalities are very great. They are very powerful. And Lord Brahma will be instructing this transcendental sound vibration to all his descendants, all his disciples. So this is one aspect of this transcendental sound vibration, pranava, which could be understood as impersonal and personal. So one who chants pranava with personal understanding, they get personal realization of Krishna. So pranava is powerful, it is potent. Next, Krishna gave not just pranava, he also gave something which is known as Kama Gayatri. Kama Gayatri. Kama Gayatri is considered very powerful Gayatri mantra, which was given to Lord Brahma by Krishna from his flute, from the sound vibration from his flute. This Kama Gayatri went into the ears of Lord Brahma. So here again, he is carrying the transcendental sound vibration. So we can see that this Kama Gayatri is coming through the disciplic succession and it is coming to us. So when we get Brahman initiation, the last Gayatri mantra that we receive is Kama Gayatri. So it is coming from Krishna directly through Lord Brahma, through the disciplic succession, all the way to us. See, so this is the potency of the parampara. That is, Lord Brahma is the original founder, acharya of our sampradaya. And it is very important that we know the glory of Lord Brahma. And in different sampradayas, they have taken different approaches in understanding Lord Brahma. For example, here, Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly presents the glory of Brahma because apparently he has committed a mistake. And we shouldn't criticize Lord Brahma. So to instruct us, this verse is presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. Similarly, when we can see another mistake that has been done by Lord Brahma, where is that? In Brahma Vimohana Leela, right? So, our acharyas, the acharyas coming from our sampradaya, coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and onwards, we elaborately discuss Brahma Vimohana Leela. Right, we don't turn a blind eye towards Brahma Vimohana Leela. We say, yeah, this is the thing. We explain everything. For example, we understand Brahma was not bewildered because of Mahamaya. Brahma was bewildered because of Yogamaya, and yet it was an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. Now, if you see Madhva Sampradaya, when Madhvacharya was writing commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he just turned away the pages of Brahma Vimohana Leela. He didn't write any comments on Brahma Vimohana Leela. He said, he is our founder Acharya, so how can he commit mistake? And we don't want to comment on the mistake of our founder Acharya. He's a great personality. Just like the same mood as Bhagavatam has taken right now, in the same way Madhvacharya didn't comment on Brahma Vimohana Leela. However, our acharyas explains everything back and forth, so that the mistake is explained, but the real reason for the mistake is explained, and sufficient instructions are given to us so that we don't misunderstand the position of Lord Brahma. This is the approach that is taken by Srimad Bhagavatam also. Bhagavatam doesn't cover the mistake that has been done by Lord Brahma, but explains and instructs. See? So this is Lord Brahma. He's a great personality. And it is mentioned that his body is made of intelligence. Right? Even though he's handling the mode of passion, we cannot consider him to be passionate. And his body is made of intelligence. And he has direct access to Lord Krishna. It's amazing, he has direct access to Lord Krishna. In the beginning of the second canto and then the third canto here, we can see he had direct interaction with Krishna. He had direct interaction with Vishnu. He had direct vision of Golok Vrindavan. He saw Krishna. And we can see he had a shake hands with the Lord. It's amazing, right? It is mentioned karasparsha, equivalent in Sanskrit of shaking hand. Karasparsha, touching. I mean, not necessarily shaking, but at least, you know, touching the hand. You know? So karasparsha, he had karasparsha with the Supreme Lord. See the position of Lord Brahma. And his body is a manifestation of intelligence. He is manifesting intelligence. And with that intelligence, he is performing all his creation. It is so difficult. Creation in itself is so difficult because, practically speaking, there are unlimited living entities, and all these unlimited living entities have their own unique desires. And having all these different kinds of desires, Lord Brahma has to match all these desires and has to give bodies accordingly, both the subtle and the gross body. How difficult this task is. So Brahma had the power to do that. So Brahma is considered most intelligent. And again, when it comes to the knowledge, it is mentioned, our sampradaya, particularly Brahma Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya, is known for knowledge. All the acharyas have written so many books, right? Including, you know, we can see Srila Prabhupada, how many books has he written? 60 volumes. 60 volumes of books, it's so many. You know, a bookshelf, it is mentioned, look, even an author, a great author, it is practically difficult to author so many books. In a lifetime, one may author maybe, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, but 60 books, so difficult. See, Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he has written so many books. In fact, it was mentioned, many of his books were lost forever. Many of his books, at one point, I think it was in the absence of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the original manuscripts, they were carrying, some of the disciples, they were carrying these original manuscripts in a boat, I think in Ganges. And the boat got capsized and all the manuscripts got lost. So whatever is available as the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it is not complete. It is many more. So, I think in one of the lectures, I think Jagtarini Mataji was mentioning, we need to understand that it is not meant for us. That's why it is gone. So, this is the potency of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So many books. And on the contrary, of course, we know that Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he didn't even write anything. But he was completely, transcendently realized. So, and at the same time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how many books he wrote? So many, again, you know, 60 or 70 of them. And it is mentioned, even one of those books, if somebody can write even one of those books, it is considered a great achievement in one's lifetime. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you understand his life, he had a certain kind of headache, a certain kind of a migraine kind of headache, very severe, excruciating pain. So generally, an author will not have such kind of a disease condition for his head, generally speaking. If somebody has such kind of a migraine, such kind of a pain, he cannot properly think or write. It's very difficult. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur had such kind of a disease throughout and many, many years. Still, he authored so many books. So this is, we can understand the transcendental potency of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So why I'm making this point that all our acharyas, they wrote so many books and they gave so much of transcendental knowledge. So it is starting from whom? Lord Brahma. Because what is Brahma carrying? Brahma has Vedas in his hand. And also it is mentioned that wherever Brahma goes, who accompanies him? The personification of all the Vedas. So he is also known as Vedagarbha. He's a source of Vedas in that sense, because he is carrying Vedas all the time. So this is the power of Lord Brahma. So here, the Lord instructed Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma is carrying this knowledge, and he is giving this knowledge to his disciplic succession. So he said, our parampara is not really known for wealth. Rather, our parampara is known for knowledge. There are some other paramparas, they have more wealth. You know, when you see Lakshmi Sampradaya, you know, they have more wealth because Lakshmi Devi is personally present. Of course, they have also acharyas written so many books. At the same time, our Sampradaya is known for knowledge. So that's why our whole movement is based on books. It is, you know, studying book and distributing books. Everything is based on books, right? So this is the potency of Lord Brahma. And again, coming back to the point of intelligence of Brahma. Lord Brahma is so intelligent that in Srimad Bhagavatam, many times Lord Brahma's prayers are mentioned. We can see many here in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is prayers for creative energy. So that, you know, a couple of chapters before, we saw the prayers of Brahma for the creative energy. Then we can see Brahma's prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, very famous prayers of Lord Brahma. So in these prayers, when we see, we can see the intelligence of Brahma. Recently I was studying the Priyavrata pastime. So it was very wonderful to see how Lord Brahma was interacting with Priyavrata Maharaj. Because again, they are all very great personalities. Priyavrata is the brother of Uttanapad, again coming in the direct line of Manus, Swayambhu Manu, directly from Brahma. So they are great personalities, and Priyavrata was a disciple of Narada Muni, and he took up Brahmacharya and he was performing devotion service for, you know, thousands and thousands of years in Gandhamadana Hill. So many years. And he had indeed developed a taste for worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even though he was performing the austerities, his heart was completely melted in loving devotion service to the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that as he was chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, his heart was fully filled with name, form, qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So he was relishing the holy names of Krishna. He was not feeling bored. He was not thinking when my chanting is going to finish so that I can do something else. He was completely relishing. And so he had no interest whatsoever to be the ruler of the world, to have a family and enjoy the material world. He had no interest whatsoever. And with this position, Narada Muni was completely happy. Narada Muni was completely happy with this Brahmachari disciple, and he wanted him to continue that position. At the same time, his father, Swayambhu Manu, he was looking for someone. It is mentioned why he was looking for someone, because finally, after the Prachetas, the only person left was Daksha. And Daksha he left because he wanted more power. So he went to perform austerities to gain piety, to have more power. So the universe was left with no qualified rulers, and so Swayambhu Manu had to approach Priyavrata. And Priyavrata, he approached Priyavrata, but he was not interested. Then he decided, I can only do one thing. And he also understood that it is a bit inappropriate to intervene the relation between Guru and his disciple. Because here Narada Muni is there and his staunch disciple Priyavrata. So it is a bit inappropriate, even though I am the father, to intervene in this position. He was very cultured, not like current parents. You know, current parents, you know, if a son becomes a brahmachari, they can intervene in all different ways. They manipulate all different ways how to get into the relation and, you know, get out of the situation. they can use everything, including sentiments, you know, power, words, sometimes actions. So they can use anything. However, he was very cultured, so he took a most appropriate means to persuade Prevrata, and that was getting Lord Brahma in the scene. Because Lord Brahma, he is the greatest personality and he is being respected by everyone, including Narada Muni, Priyavrata and Swayambhu Manu. So, there is a great description in the 5th canto, the arrival of Lord Brahma from his abode to Gandhamadana Hill. You know, it is just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear. You know, he has all the associates, all the demigods, he has his own carrier, and he has, along with him, the Vedas personified. So all of them arrived in the Gandhamadana Hill. So his assembly is there, and Priyavrata is there, Narada Muni is there, Swayambhu Manu is there, so the whole team is there. Then Lord Brahma started speaking to Priyavrata. It's a very interesting conversation. So the first statement that is made by Lord Brahma is very, very amazing. The nutshell of the first statement is that he addressed Priyavrata that don't be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is very interesting, it was a very instructive statement that don't be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why Lord Brahma mentioned that don't be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that indeed he was actually smiling. Brahma was smiling and mentioning to him, don't be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Brahma's smile indicates that you are my grandson and you have determination to continue as a brahmachari, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But I am Brahma and I am determined to get you out from your current position. So that's why he smiled. And then he said, don't be envious of the Supreme Lord. The underlying meaning is that I am representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the instructions that I am going to give is directly imparted by the Lord Himself. See, that's why it is mentioned. Whatever Brahma says is that is coming from the Supreme Lord. So it is mentioned they are in union. Lord Brahma and Lord Krishna, they are in union in desire. So Lord Brahma's devotion is such a high caliber that the Lord, whatever Lord desires, he also desires. So this is the position of Lord Brahma. So then he explained how everyone is under the will of the Supreme Lord and everyone has to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he mentioned, now you have to do this. You have to get out from this situation and you have to rule over the world. Then Priyavrata had to follow. So there it's very clearly mentioned that Lord Brahma is directly representing Krishna. Now, if you see the prayers of Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, we can see again the greatness of Lord Brahma and the subtleties of Lord Brahma's prayers. In fact, we had to see that even though Lord Brahma committed that mistake, Lord didn't respond anything even after hearing all the prayers of Lord Brahma. Brahma offered beautiful prayers. Even though the Lord heard all the prayers, he didn't mention anything. He just kept silent. So here we can see that very interesting aspect. Initially, Lord Brahma glorifies the Lord for his beautiful form, for his beautiful activities. And then he makes a very, very subtle point. He makes a very subtle point that your form is so inconceivable. Your form is so inconceivable. He mentioned, Nau midyate abhrava pushe taditambaraya gunjavatam saparibichalasan mukhaya vanyasraje kavala vetra vishana venu lakshma shriye mrudupate pachupangajaya. He beautifully describes the beautiful form of the Lord as a cowherd boy, as a son of Nanda Maharaj, having a morsel of food in his left hand. You know, he is just eating and eating with his left hand. And he is just along with his cowherd boyfriends. You know, he has his peacock feather, he has his beautiful clothing, and he has his gunja earrings. He nicely narrates the form of the Lord. Then he says that it is very difficult to understand the form of the Lord. I saw your beautiful form, but I couldn't recognize you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so I committed a mistake by testing you. Then he says, even just by seeing the form, I couldn't really understand who you are. Now, it is mentioned, after name, next is form, right? And after form, next deeper subject is the qualities of the Lord. And the deepest aspect of the Lord is activities of the Lord. So everything starts from the name, from Nama, Rupa comes, from the Rupa, Guna comes, and from the Guna, Leela comes. So even in chanting, the progression is in the same order. Everything starts from the name of the Lord. So first we need purification just by hearing the name of the Lord. Now, Brahma is making the statement that I saw your form, I know your name, and I saw your form. I couldn't understand. I am seeing you, still I can't understand you. It is completely inconceivable. Then you are performing this most inconceivable pastimes, just like eating with your left hand, and you are taking morsel of food from your friends and just eating that remnant. So when I see these things, how am I able to understand you? I don't have access to you. So Lord Brahma says, Jananta eva jananto. Those who say that they understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, let them say so. But I say that I cannot understand. See? So Brahma is the greatest of the intelligent men of the world, and he is the most humble. So that is a sign of Lord Brahma. He is the intelligence, his knowledge is accompanied with humility. If we have some knowledge, we can easily become puffed up. We want to quote 10 verses, or we want to make some points, or we want to interfere in a conversation, right? Sometimes it happens, you know, a wrong etiquette that a senior devotee is speaking to someone else, maybe a one-on-one conversation. So we may feel like, okay, we want to interfere and we want to give my point also. Maybe I can give a point. I know a better point than him. So this is our, you know, pride. It's not humility. Whereas Lord Brahma is so humble, he says, you know, someone who knows, says that they know Krishna, let them say so, but I don't know you. Even though I am seeing you, now I have seen your pastime, still I don't know you. So that's why he said, Yane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivandi sanmukhirtam sa bhavatiya vartam sthane sthita shrutikatam tanman manohur ye prayasho jita jitopyasi sa istrilokyam. He says, we have to give up this Yane prayasam to understand Krishna by this speculation. I am giving up. This is the mood of Brahma. You know, I have so much of intelligence. And I tried to understand you and I tried to test you, but I failed. So Jnane Prayasam Udapasya, I completely give up this method to understand Krishna. Namanta Eva, now I am paying obeisances unto you. Jivandi Sanmukharidam Bhavdiya Vartam. Now, let me hear about you in the association of the devotees. In that way I can understand. Through bhakti we can understand Krishna. Bhaktiyama Apichanati. So that is the means to approach Krishna. So this is the position of Lord Brahma. Further, Lord Brahma very interestingly says that kindly forgive my offenses. Just like a baby in the womb of the mother may kick the mother, but that is not considered as a serious offense. Mother, she doesn't care because it is part of her body. In the same way, Lord Brahma says, I am just like your child. So I may have committed some mistake. It is just like a kick of a child in the womb of the mother. So please don't take this very seriously. So see the consciousness of Brahma. So Brahma is considering himself, I am eternal servant of Krishna. I am just a child of Krishna. And then he asks for forgiveness. And of course, Lord accepts, but he doesn't speak. So again, there are subtle messages in that. So it's very interesting, the interactions between Lord Brahma and the Lord. Here again shows the greatness of the Lord. And Lord Brahma says, you know, Koveti Bhuman. He again, you know, Brahma is again and again mentioning to the Lord, you know, who can understand you? This is the mood in which Lord Brahma is approaching the Lord. He says, Koveti Bhuman, you are the greatest personality, you are the most worshipable one. Koveti, who can know you? Bhagavan Paratma. You are the Bhagavan, you are the Paramatma. Paratma means the Paramatma. You are the super soul of all the living entities. So who can know you? Yogeshiroti Vibhuti Trilokyam. And you are known as the Yogeshara in the three worlds. Kwava Kathamva Kadiva Kadedi Vistaren Kridasi Yogamaya. So he mentioned, how you come to this material world, no one can know. How many times you come to this material world, no one can know. Why you come to this material world, no one can know. How many times you come to this material world, no one can know. This is the position of Brahma. Brahma is saying, I don't know. So Brahma is the greatest of the personalities. He's representing Krishna. He's truly representing Krishna because he's manifesting humility. And he's showing his dependence on Krishna. In creation, he showed his dependence on Krishna. That is a prayer for the creative energy. And here also he shows in this pastime, and he actually falls down. He actually regrets. He understands his position is wrong. He actually shows the dependence on the Supreme Lord. And further pastimes also, Lord Brahma shows his dependence on the Supreme Lord. We know when the Kumaras ask Lord Brahma about the senses and the sense objects, we can see it in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. For Kumaras, they are also great intelligent people. They are the manifestation of the Jnana Shakti of the Supreme Lord. They approached Lord Brahma and asked a very important question. And the question is, there is a very intimate relationship between the senses and the sense objects. Right? If we have a tongue, we want to eat palatable food, natural, right? If your prasadam, you know, if a nice stuff is there, you know, it doesn't matter whether there's hunger or not. We want to eat that. Right? If there is a beautiful scene, the eyes just goes for that, right? So there is an intimate connection between the senses and the sense objects. And the Kumara says, that's why the living entities are entangled in this material world, which is completely true, right? We get completely captivated. We may be reading Bhagavata, maybe reciting some verses from Bhagavad Gita, but something we see, then we are completely bewildered. Right? So such an intimate relation between the senses and the sense objects. So these Kumaras, they went to Brahma and asked, can you please tell us, how can we break this intimate connection between the senses and the sense objects? And Brahma, even though he was the most intelligent person, he got bewildered again. But the point is, what he did, he accepted that he doesn't know the answer directly, and he prayed to the Supreme Lord. And then the Lord came in the form of Hamsa. The Lord came and instructed. And the instruction was, once we develop the taste for devotional service, rasavrajam rasopyacha param drishtva nivartate. So by developing a higher taste in devotional service, this intimate relation between the senses and the sense objects can be slackened. The Brahma gave this instruction. So we can see the position of Brahma. He is such a great personality, and he is showing his greatness by showing his dependence on Krishna. And next is mentioned, all the demigods are coming from Lord Brahma. He's mentioned the Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, all the demigods, they are coming from Lord Brahma. Everything is source is Brahma. So Brahma is again greatest of the personalities. Now finally, the most instructive point is given. There is a purpose for the exhibition of such a tendency by Brahma, and he is not to be condemned like an ordinary living entity. So here, a couple of points we need to understand. That on one side, we can understand that the Lord himself blessed in the beginning of creation Brahma, saying that you will never get deviated from the path of devotional service. So he promised. Still, here we can see that Lord Brahma got affected by his own daughter. So it was a fall down. So there are a couple of explanations we can see to this. One is, the Brahma we are referring to is not the same Brahma. He was from a different kalpa. So it was a kalpa bheda. So that is one understanding. Second understanding is that even though Brahma manifested such a tendency, it was more instructional. It was instructional for everyone, all the living entities. So we can also get instructed from this tendency of Lord Brahma, that one has to be very careful in the interaction with the opposite sex. Otherwise, one can get carried away because the power is so great. No one can say, I will not be afflicted by the attraction to the opposite sex. Anyone can be attracted. Just like we know the pastime of Narada Muni, right? One time Narada Muni, he was a bit puffed up, right? Mm-hmm. He was a bit puffed up and he thought, you know, I am a Naishtika Brahmachari and I will not get attracted to any woman. He was thinking like that, and in that way. So the Lord, he was with Lord Narayan, and he was in the, I think he was in the material, it was a pastime happened in the Bhumandala only, in the material world only. And so the Lord understood the nature of the mind of Narada Muni. And I can't completely remember the details, but at one point, I think Narada felt thirsty, right? And then he says, okay, he went somewhere and he got attracted to a woman. He got attracted to a woman, he got married, and you know, the whole thing happened. Then, finally, he realized that it was the Lord himself. It was a pastime of the Lord. So the Lord was actually teaching Narada Muni that, you know, don't be puffed up. Anyone can get attracted. Similarly, there is another pastime of a sage who, I think he was a disciple of Vyasadeva. And he also became very puffed up. He thought, you know, I will never get attracted to woman. I'm completely fixed in the renounced order. So I will have no problem. So he was thinking in this way. So Vyasadeva understood, his guru understood that this guy is quite puffed up. So this this sage, this brahmachari was alone in his kutir, and it was raining and it was dark in the night. So there was a knock in the door, you know, someone was knocking, tuck, tuck, tuck. So this brahmachari opened the door. So then there was a beautiful lady standing and asked for shelter, you know, it is raining, I am completely drenched. Can I just be here? He said, okay, just be outside, you know, so okay, was there. And after some time, he thought, he went inside his kutir and the lady was outside, just in the, you know, there was some shelter. And the sage, he started again thinking, he started contemplating on the woman. And he thought, maybe I should get her inside. Then after some time, he got her inside the room. And then his mind again played the trick and he wanted to embrace this woman. So as he was going to embrace the woman, what happened? This woman transformed into the form of his own guru. Then he said, now you see, so you can very easily fall down because of the form of the woman. So you have to be very careful. So it is very important. So one can never be puffed up and think, you know, I am well protected. No, one has to always take shelter of Krishna. It's a very instructive point. And that is being actually passed down in the disciplic succession. So we have. And finally, we shouldn't condemn such living entity. In fact, that is the whole point, that one shouldn't criticize Lord Brahma. And we can see the Marichi and other Manasa Putras of Brahma, they didn't criticize the Lord, but they said in a very, very nice way to Brahma that what you're doing is not right. They didn't try to criticize. Similarly, if we find fault in a great personality, first of all, we shouldn't criticize. It's not our business to correct someone who is very senior. It's not our business. And if we see some, say somebody is just superior to us, and if we see some problems, and if we could tell somebody who is someone else who is superior, and they could correct, but we shouldn't take that step to correct. So it depends on the relation. We shouldn't just directly try to correct. Sometimes one can tell in a very humble way, but we need to understand it's not our business to correct one who is superior. One has to be very mindful in terms of that etiquette. So here, yeah, it is so nice to hear the glory of Brahma. And he is complete form of, and the final point here is, Brahma is the complete form of the absolute truth and is invested with multifarious energies. We can see how he is representing the absolute truth. Because he is giving the absolute truth in terms of knowledge, and he is following the absolute truth completely in the form of devotional service, in the form of creation. And so he is infested with multifarious energy. So he has all the power, all the potencies to do his service. So if we are dependent on Krishna, then Krishna will give all the energies, all the shaktis to perform the service. This is the point. So Brahma is dependent on Krishna, so he has all the multifarious energies. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu. That's okay.
My question is, in this present age of Kali Yuga, are there any people, any person who have seen Krishna face to face? And if so, what are the symptoms of that peripheral eye show?
Point number one, apparently, I'm just explaining the whole aspect of the question. So question is, in the present age of Kali, is there anyone who has seen Krishna face to face? Now, this question is based on a preconception. And the preconception is that our eyes are superior than our other senses. Right? First point is, our eyes are superior than our other senses. So that's why we ask, have you seen? It's a general question, have you seen? So, the answer to the question is yes, by the way. We'll come to that later. But, none of our senses are superior in that sense. Or, we cannot say eyes are the most superior senses that we have. At the same time, we can see, or we can use the term, we can experience Krishna through all the senses. And we are actually experiencing Krishna through our senses. The first sense through which we experience Krishna is ears. You want to see Krishna? You see Krishna through your ears. So, again, it is coming to the same canto, instruction by the same personality, that is Lord Brahma. A very beautiful verse again. Tam bhakti yoga paribhavita hrit saroja ase shrutekshana patho nanunatha pumsam yadyadhya ta urgaya vibhavayanti tattat vabu pranayase sadanugrahaya. Lord Brahma says that we'll take to the second line of this verse, that is shrutekshita patho. How you can see Krishna? Through shruta ikshita. Ikshan means seeing. Shruta ikshita patho. Our path of Vedas, our path of devotional service, it is shruta ikshita. We had to see Krishna through ears. Shruta ikshita patho. Narunatha pumsam. Then what happens? It is mentioned. Yad yad dhya ta urgaya vibhavayanti. In whichever form of the Lord, one hears Krishna's glories, one who performs devotional service unto Krishna, in the self-same form, Krishna manifests in the lotus heart of that devotee. So Krishna, we can see Krishna through our ears first, and the Krishna personally manifests himself completely in the heart of the devotee. When that happens, Tom Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Hrit Saroja. Paribhavita means when one is completely engaged in devotional service. And then when one hears the glories of the Lord through ears, then Krishna himself manifests in the heart of such a devotee. So this is one way of seeing Krishna through ears. So when we are hearing Krishna's names, we are seeing Krishna. Is that the only way seeing Krishna? No. We can see Krishna through all our senses. We can see Krishna through our tongue. How can we see Krishna through our tongue? Yeah, chanting is there. That is generally through ears, chanting, of course. And then we have seeing Krishna through our tongue. You know, just upstairs. After this lecture, we go upstairs and then we can see Krishna through our tongue. The problem is not our tongue or our eyes or our ears or the touch or the skin. The problem is what is our consciousness? What is our bhakti? So we are actually seeing Krishna ultimately through our consciousness, not through our senses. In other words, if our consciousness is bhakti, it is bhakti conscious, then we can see Krishna. That's why it's mentioned, paribhavita saroja. Why? Bhakti yoga paribhavita saroja. So we can see Krishna through bhakti. When we have the bhakti shakti, then we can see Krishna through bhakti shakti. Otherwise, we cannot see Krishna. So the means of seeing Krishna through our tongue, that is, we can see. Then how else we can see Krishna? We can see Krishna through our touch, right? How can we see Krishna through our touch? Anyone knows how we can see Krishna through our touch?
By bowing down to a pure devotee.
We can by bowing down to a pure devotee and we can touch the feet of Krishna. It is mentioned. Shiraso padayo krutva bahubhyam cha parasparam prapannam pavhyamam isha bhidam hrityu graharnava. We can go to the Lord if one is second initiated. Here, we can go to the altar. Then, not for this purpose, but after serving Krishna, it's mentioned in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Krishna in his instruction to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita. He says, Shiraso padayo krutva, shiras, the head, you bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and bahubhyam cha parasparam. Then you embrace the Lord. Then tell Krishna, Prapannam, I am surrendering unto you, Krishna, because I am fearful of death. The death personifies is standing behind me. He is trying to catch me. So I am completely surrendering unto your lotus feet. But one shouldn't have hair in the head. If I have hair, I don't do this. One shouldn't, here hair shouldn't touch. If I am clean shaven, I do this. Otherwise, I don't. Cleanliness is very important when this verse is recited and practicing this verse. One has to be careful. So this is, we can touch Krishna. Or we touch sometimes Srimad Bhagavatam and put it in our head. What is that? Or we put our head down to Srimad Bhagavatam. We are touching Krishna. See, this is again, we are experiencing Krishna. Then is that all? We can smell Krishna. Yes, exactly. So it is an item of bhakti during the Srimad Bhagavatam. Did you get the flowers? Did you? I'm asking you. Did you get the flowers?
Sir?
Did you get the flowers offered to the Lord?
Yeah, and I whenever I come, somebody gives me.
Yeah.
I put it in my pocket. When I feel hungry, I eat it.
You eat? Okay. It's a different use. But I certainly appreciate your devotion. But smell Krishna with that flower and then eat it. The purpose is to first to smell, so you smell that. Ghranam tu tatpada saroja saurabhe. It is mentioned regarding Ambarish Maharaj. Ghranam tu tatpada saroja saurabhe. Because we are offering flowers to the lotus feet of Krishna and we are smelling. So it is mentioned there is fragrance to the lotus feet of the Lord. It is mentioned that when Krishna walks in Vrindavan, one can know Krishna how? By the smell, by the fragrance emanating from the body of Krishna. So it is mentioned by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion that when Krishna was present in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Kurukshetra battlefield is filled with blood. Think about going to a slaughterhouse, we don't even want to go. I'm saying, battle, human flesh everywhere. And it'll be smelling blood like anything, the ocean of blood. What would you smell? You just smell blood. But it is mentioned when Krishna was present in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the fragrance emanating from the Lord was superseding everything else. So this is the glory of Krishna. Krishna's smell is so attractive. So we can smell Krishna. So this is Krishna, We are talking about Krishna. So we can experience Krishna we can see Krishna by smell. Then when it comes to taste, it's also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter, Rasoham Apsut Kaunteya, that when we drink a cup of water, we can think this taste is coming from Krishna. That is seeing Krishna. So if you ask, are we seeing Krishna in this age of Kali? It's up to you. If you want to see Krishna, you can see Krishna. Don't ask everyone else. Yes, devotees are generally seeing Krishna all the time. But if you want to see Krishna, you can see Krishna. Then finally, if you want to see Krishna, through your eyes, see the beautiful form of Sri Sri Radha Vallabha. Now, one may say, no, it is just the deity. It is just dependent on our bhakti, our consciousness. How much are you seeing Shyam Sundar in the form of the deity? It is just up to our consciousness. A pure devotee, when he sees the deity form of the Lord, he is seeing the personality of Godhead directly. There is no different. Sakshat Vrajendra Nandana Pratima Na Tumi Sakshat Vrajendra Nandana. So this is the point. You are not a Pratima, you are not a statue, you are Vrajendra Nandana. You are the son of Nanda Maharaj, the king of Vraja. So we can have the experiment. So today we can have the whole experiment of seeing Krishna. We can see Krishna everywhere. And also, finally, we can say Krishna in his energies. All energies, these are all Krishna's energies. If we think about Krishna while seeing Krishna's energies, then we are seeing Krishna.
That's the first part of my question.
Yeah.
Second question was, what are the symptoms of a
self-realized
soul?
A self-realized soul, when he sees Krishna, our philosophy is not about seeing Krishna. Our philosophy is about what to do after seeing Krishna. That is our whole, our Krishna consciousness movement, the whole Bhagavatam, whole Bhagavad Gita, it is all about not seeing Krishna. The whole philosophy is about what to do after seeing Krishna. Mm-hmm. So, what will you do after seeing Krishna? Many times, this is a common question, because when I go to my relatives, so, have you seen Krishna? Or, you know, in your movement, how many people have seen Krishna? Bhagavad Darshanam, how many people have got that? You know, this is the kind of question they ask, right? now you are very serious in devotional service, you are wearing a saffron. Okay, have you seen Krishna? Now, how many people in ISKCON have seen Krishna? But our philosophy is not seeing Krishna. Seeing Krishna, what are you going to do after seeing Krishna? If you go to the spiritual world, you are seeing Krishna, but you are not just looking at Krishna all the time. But the question is, how are you going to serve Krishna? So a person who is seeing Krishna means, who is experiencing Krishna, is serving Krishna. A symptom of a devotee who is seeing Krishna is he is serving Krishna. So when we see a pure devotee, their nature is avyartha karatam, means he is not going to waste any time. He is completely engaged in Krishna service. For example, we have Srila Prabhupada, always serving Krishna. So that is a symptom of a pure devotee. And all these devotees, including all of us, we are also experiencing Krishna. And to that degree, we are serving Krishna. So what is our symptom? If you want to see, we are all serving. If anyone is doing some devotional service, then you need to understand that we are all seeing Krishna. Otherwise, we will not be doing any service. So we are experiencing Krishna to some degree, and to that degree we are serving Krishna. Is that clear? Yeah, thank you. Any other question? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, it's a very unique position because Brahma and his sons, no one else. It's a very unique position. Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna and all his sons, that's all. So, they presented the case in front of Lord Brahma with humility. And what he said, it is not befitting for a great personality to act in this way. They were not criticizing, you are a rascal. You are saying you are our spiritual master, you are a rascal. Now, we may say like that. That is our mentality. But he said, it is not really befitting for a great personality. They are saying, you are a great personality, so don't act in this way. Still, they didn't stop at there. And after telling that, Brahma wasn't convinced. And they immediately prayed to the Supreme Lord. They took shelter of the Supreme Lord. So they had the intervention of the Supreme Lord so that Brahma himself understood the mistake. And then he rectified himself. So yes, there is you know, in a, if you consider a, we have to consider two scenarios. If you are with elevated devotees, really advanced devotees, not just seniors, really elevated devotees, say spiritual masters, we shouldn't correct. Even if we see, you know, it's not our business to correct. We don't do any, at any cost. And at the same time, when you see, you know, immediate superiors, you know, if you see something which we think we can address in a nice way. There's nothing wrong. At the same time, our mentality, our attitude has to be right. If we are speaking with humility, with the right mentality, with the right consciousness, yes, there are certain things you can and there are certain things you can't. That you will understand with experience, with consultation, you understand. Certain things you may not be able to correct. You may see a mistake, you may not be able to. Then you may have to approach someone else if it is serious. Certain things, yeah, one can correct. One can tell, maybe this is better than that. In that way. Yes, hold on. Let's see anyone else has got any questions. Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
You know, we have like Duryodhana, yeah. So many times Krishna, he still, that depends on the purity of the heart, how much they are elevated. And also, you know that sometimes even those who try to serve Krishna, like Lord Chaitanya was Krishna himself, and we had, I think that was the name Krishna Das, who was his personal servant, who was thinking all the time, he still went off with some other girls. Mm. So we, if we see Krishna, we must not think that we are really something special. We have to think that we still have a lot of work to do on ourselves. And if he was the one with elevated, really elevated soul, the symptoms of that's always written in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked him. So from the stories we have from Mahabharata, from the stories of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can see what are the symptoms and how the people are in connection to Krishna. You may have a fear, you know, like all the time you may have a fear. Kastiness is the rasa. If you don't have love for Krishna, you know, if you see him, you may be afraid. Like a criminal who sees the policeman, he will be afraid. But the one who does not do anything wrong according to the law, he won't be afraid. So the symptoms of one who sees Krishna may be really different. Krishna is merciful to everyone. He gives darshan, but...
I can tell what Madhuri referred. The symptoms of, okay, point number one is that if somebody may be seeing Krishna, it's an important point. With the physical eyes, one may be able to see Krishna, but he's not really seeing Krishna. So that is, we can say, for example, here also, if an atheist comes and sees beautiful form of Radha and Krishna, he's not actually seeing Krishna. Because he's seeing a statue. And Krishna do reciprocate in the same way. If you see him as stone, he's reciprocate as stone. So he's not seeing Krishna. Similarly, if you take the Puranic example, Duryodhana was seeing Krishna all the time, but he was not really seeing Krishna. So the first is physical seeing, second is experiencing Krishna, or seeing with bhakti. Premajana charita bhakti vilochane sanda sadeva tadeshu vilokayanti. So not with the eyes of love. So that is, you know, seeing at the same time, not seeing Krishna. Then Madhuri also mentioned a very good point that the symptoms, if we literally have symptoms, yes, that is the last section of Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. You know, towards the last, we can see, you know, the symptoms of a realized soul. So there it is very nicely mentioned. In summary, there are mentions about how his senses are controlled. Now, he is not engaged in sense gratification. His mind is not engaged in sense gratification. And he is a Matpara devotee. That is the essential point. That is, a Matpara devotee means he is completely engaged in Krishna service. And then Matpara devotee, who is the example that is given? As a exactly. The Ambarish Maharaj is given as an example of a Matpara devotee. So what is the symptom of that Matpara devotee? Savai manah Krishna padaravindayo vachamsi vaikuntha gunani varnane karo harer mandira marjanadushu shrutim chakarachyuta satkadhote. Like that. He is all, in all means, he is engaged in service of Krishna. So that is a symptom of a devotee who is, you know, experiencing Krishna, who is really seeing Krishna.
Is that okay? Yeah.
Okay, we are running late actually, so probably we'll stop and you can ask to me personally, that will be better. Okay? Thank you very much. Granthrashimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Last mantra mentioned, you said, the first one and last one you mentioned.
I don't know. somewhere, 11th canto probably.
Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam, yeah. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.